of a stronger expression of moral corruption than the following statement: "This child must die so I can live as I please." In her speech accepting the Golden Globe Award about 3 weeks ago, actress Michelle Williams credited abortion and contraception for her professional success. Quote, "I would not have been able to do this without employing a woman's right to choose when to have my children and with whom." Williams is the lead actress in a forthcoming Amazon drama titled This Is Jane, which is an apparent celebration of women who illegally aborted babies in the 1960s. It's pretty sick. So how did we get here? Well, let's rewind. Almost exactly 1 year ago today, January 22nd, 2019, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law the Reproductive Health Act, therein legalizing late-term abortion if it is deemed, and I quote, "necessary to protect the patient's life or health." Under this law, the mother can obtain an abortion for any reason using the broad application of the word health. Under Doe versus Bolton, a companion case to Roe versus Wade, the word health is defined to include emotional, psychological, familial, situational, and financial considerations. Basically anything. The signing of the document into law was welcomed by a standing ovation and cheering. And so now we have it. Judicial affirmation that a woman can have her unborn, and that's with an asterisk because there are post-birth provisions, child killed simply because she does not want to deal with the inconvenience. Michelle Williams made the statement, "I am also grateful to have lived in a moment in our society where choice exists, because as women and as girls, things can happen to our bodies that are not our choice." It's a pretty ignorant statement. So how did we get here? The day after that New York legislation was signed into law, I was commuting from Corpus Christi to Kingsville for classes and had tuned into the Rush Limbaugh show as he delivered a monologue that left a deep impression on me. I'm going to paraphrase Mr. Limbaugh's statements, but he leveled a crushing condemnation of a movement that arose in the 1990s, wherein his party, those on the right of the political spectrum, had concluded that they were losing too much popularity for standing up against the social trends in the moral arena. These people branded themselves fiscal conservatives. This movement dropped the fight against abortion and government sanctions on the nuclear family. Whether they actually endorsed these policies or apathetically turned a blind eye to them, fiscal conservatives walked away from the fight, compromised for what they viewed to be the greater good, and willfully left to fend for themselves those among us that could not defend themselves. And look where we are now, all in the name of strategy, according to the Guttmacher, I don't know if that's how you say it, Guttmacher Institute, does studies on this. Since 1996, the number of abortions in the United States averages to just under 1.2 million annually. That means in the last 24 years, 27.7 million children, innocent children, have had their lives snuffed out without ever getting the chance to breathe their own air with their own lungs. This is equal to the population, roughly, of the largest 16 cities in the United States. Combined. All of those combined. Or, for reference, the current population of the entire state of Texas is 29.9 million. All the while, as this is going on, crowds shout their approval, entire New York legislative body gives a standing ovation, and esteemed celebrities, and I quote, air quotes, esteemed celebrities, claim a moral high ground that is both perverted and disgusting. I found there is a great deal of tragedy, a tragic irony in Miss Williams standing on stage, pregnant at the time, holding an idol, exclaiming that she wouldn't have that idol had she not sacrificed her child's life for it. Make no mistake, abortion is child sacrifice. Nothing more, nothing less. But you all already knew that, and believe it or not, abortion is not the subject of this sermonette. It's not the focus. Today I want to talk to you about how we got to where we are as a country regarding abortion, as in, I want to talk about compromise. Let's start by defining the term. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines compromise as in the intransitive verb form, to come to an agreement by mutual concession. So if you think about it, every decision we make is a compromise. This is probably a lame example, but this morning when you got up, you spent the effort to prepare breakfast or make some coffee. You conceded the comfort of your bed to satisfy your need for nourishment or caffeine. So, this brings us to the first of my 3 points of the sermonette. Point one, compromise is not a matter of if, but when and on what. Ayn Rand, the author of books, she was in the early 19th century, late 18, early 19, sorry, late 19, late 1800s, early 19th, that always confuses me, sorry, makes a statement, and I'll read this slowly in case anyone's writing this down, because I found it kind of helpful to look back over it. This is a quote from the book Atlas Shrugged. In any compromise between food and poison, it is only death that can win. In any compromise between good and evil, it is only evil that can profit. I found Rand's verbiage to be brilliant when I read this. Notice her choice of elements in the statement. You did not hear me read, and if you wrote it down, you can read back through as I go through and compare. You did not hear me read, in any compromise between honey and salt, only sweetness can win. Is that how it works? I don't think so. Or how about this one? In any compromise between my preference and your preference, it is only your preference that can profit. Of course, that's kind of silly, but I'm pretty sure if we're honest, most of us have probably done exactly that. Made those sort of arguments, but that's because we're flawed. Nevertheless, compromise is a critical element of the conflict resolution process, and we're commanded to practice this for the cause of making peace with our brother. If you could turn for the first scripture to Matthew 5, verse 23. Matthew 5 and verse 23. Of course, this is during the Sermon on the Mount. Verse 23. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift after. Verse 25, settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you'll be thrown into prison. In this passage, we see the quick resolution is to our benefit, sparing us the unpleasant dealings that often accompany disagreements, but more importantly, shows us that the resolution of our differences with other men has an impact on our relationship with God. So now point two. We cannot compromise on the Bible's teachings. If you could turn to Psalms 19, verses 7 through 11. I kind of dissected this verse. We'll read it through first. I thought it was interesting to lay it out like this, but Psalms 19, 7. Reads like this. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteousness altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. You'll have to tell Mark he missed a honey reference. Moreover, by them your servant is warned. In keeping them there is great reward. So when I broke that, I just kind of, as I read that, I noticed a structure and I kind of broke it out because it seems to go in statements of three. The first describes righteousness as nouns, then righteousness as adjectives, and righteousness as verbs. So we'll go through it again, breaking it out into these categories. Nouns tell us where we can look to learn how to be righteous. So righteousness is the law, the testimony, the precepts, the commandment, fear of the Lord, judgments of the Lord. Those last two referring to acknowledgement of the Lord's power and the authority. These adjectives describe the nature of all that is righteous. Righteousness is perfect, sure, right, pure, clean, and true. The verbs tell us how we are affected when we earnestly seek and strive for righteousness. Righteousness restores our soul, makes us wise, rejoices our heart, enlightens our eyes. Righteousness is our goal. This is not part of the scripture thing. Righteousness is our goal. It's our mandate. The Bible is clear. And looking around us, it's also clear that there's a steep and slippery slope when we allow ourselves to be pulled away from the wholesome foundation of righteousness that God's truth affords us. If we are to hold to these truths of the Bible, we must know the truths of the Bible. That means daily prayer, Bible study, regular fasting, as parts of our regular routine of spiritual development. And then point three. Holding the line on biblical principles is an upstream battle, and it is only going to get more challenging. Had to do this. So that is just the nature of the beast, pun intended. Satan is the god of this world. He works tirelessly to squash the efforts of the faithful to affect this world for good. Please turn to, for the last scripture, 2 Timothy 4, verses 3 and 4. I think it's the last scripture. 2 Timothy 4, verses 3 and 4. Starting in verse 3. For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching, but have itching ears. They will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions and will turn away from the truth and wander off into myths. The moral guidelines of the Bible are, for the lack of a better term, unpopular in today's culture. The absolute truth of the Bible is laughed at, and any who believe it are scoffed at and ridiculed. But it could be worse. It will be worse. And we must be prepared to continue the fight when it does. To conclude, I thought I'd throw in a couple other quotes that I found interesting on the subject of compromise. Mahatma Gandhi. I would explain who he is, but it gets kind of long. You all know who Gandhi is. All compromise is based on give and take, but there can be no give and take on fundamentals. Any compromise on mere fundamentals is a surrender, for it is all give and no take. And then Booker T. Washington, African-American reformer during the post-Civil War era, was quoted as saying, "A lie does not become truth, wrong does not become right, and evil doesn't become good just because it is accepted by the majority. So now, legal, sanctioned, and celebrated abortions are a real thing in America today. And fiscal conservatives, by the way, have no more relevance today in society than they did when they chose to abandon that moral post. I trust that no one here is willfully taking the life of an unborn child, but we live in a world where such atrocities surround us on all sides. We know that Satan is both a roaring lion and a cunning serpent, and it is our duty to be vigilant in discerning and rejecting his ways. To do this, we must stay grounded in his word, the truth, and our calling. One final scripture, don't have to turn to. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13 says, "Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong."